You've landed Inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hello, hello. Another amazing day on Launch Street. I've got an interview for you today that is going to have you thinking on your feet. Before we dig in, I want to just take a moment to give a big shout out to all of you on Launch Street. Your stories, insights, experiences, even feedback helped shape my upcoming book, Innovation is Everybody's Business. That's the title of it. And I cannot thank you enough. I shared a lot of your brilliance throughout. So many stories of everyday innovators peppered through those pages. I can't wait for it to be released in May 2020. Seems so far away, doesn't it? At least that's how I feel. Well, until then, how about I just keep giving you killer interviews that help you be an innovation rock star? Kind of like this one. Today's everyday innovator, Jen Brown, runs The Engaging Educator and Fearless Winston-Salem. Through both, she hopes to help people use their best voice and become the strongest version of themselves. So we talk about how thinking on your feet helps you be a better leader and innovator. She even gives us exercises to help us practice this, as well as some super cool ways to be better, more active listeners, which is part of being an innovator, is being open to listening to other people, not just waiting to respond. She also shares how being a yes and person isn't about agreeing with everyone. The stories and exercises she shares will definitely make you a stronger everyday innovator. Let's get to it. Jen, thank you so much for joining me. I have a feeling we'll be, I don't know, maybe thinking on our feet for this one.
A little bit, probably. We'll see.
So Jen, what's your first memory of being innovative?
I think my first memory of being innovative was this is such a weird story, and my parents tell this story way too often. And I was in like kindergarten, and my dad had these like neon colored pencils. They just had like a neon wrap for his company, and they were cool. Like I'm a child of the 80s. I absolutely love all neons. My nails are like the brightest of bright pink right now. So these pencils were pretty bomb. And I was selling them in the playground for a nickel because I was trying to get money to buy something that I don't even remember what I was trying to buy. But I know that I was like, I got to make money. I got to do this because my parents won't buy this for me. So if I have my own money, I can do this. And I was like, but I have these cool pencils from my dad's work that I could sell. And I got in so much trouble. I cannot tell you, like little five-year-old Jen on the playground hawking these pencils for a nickel.
Love it.
Because she was like, I got to hustle. I got to figure this out because I can't, like crying didn't work to get what I wanted. And I remember that very specifically because my little brother was around and he always got the, oh, what a cute little baby. And I was like, Jen, you're a big girl. You need to do big girl things. So I sold pencils on the playground for a nickel each.
How many did you sell before your parents actually stopped you?
Oh, my parents didn't stop me. My teacher stopped me first. And then there was I was like going through at least my first box of 25, like near the end of it. And my teacher was like, what are you doing? And I remember her calling home and my dad just laughing and going, that's my daughter. And my mom was furious. Like, she's like, you can't do that. You're going to get in so much trouble. You can't sell things on the playground. I'm like, it was just a nickel. Like, no one bought more than one.
I love that as your rationale back. No one bought more than one, mom.
I'm like, I'm not taking, like, lunch money. I definitely was taking nickels from kids just fine.
But I love the juxtaposition and the two responses too. Cause I was just reading a study about how, while we rank creativity, teachers rank creativity as one of the most important skills to learn. And in the classroom, they're actually ranked as their least liked students, the ones who they would classify as creative. Mm-hmm. And you can't blame them, right? There's 35 kids in a class. They're managing. So the ones who are different, disruptive, need a new way, don't work with the traditional models, tend to get ousted. So you learn very early on that thinking differently actually gets you in trouble. You actually should mm-hmm. think, you know, the right way, the one way, the way you're told. So I think your parents, and not to throw your mom under the bus, because I'm sure she's amazing, but the difference in their responses kind of highlights that of, you know, your dad's like, yep, good for her. And your mom's like, no, that's not how we do things.
I think it carried on through life though, too, honestly. But yeah. Now they both are very, very like, are you ever, I mean, years ago, they were more like this. Now they've just come to terms that I'm never going to grow up and I'm always going to be like kind of spunky and out there. I mean, I'm 37 at this point, so I'm probably not going to change too much in the fact that I'm like, sure, I'm going to go do this and I'm going to try it. And why not? And there was a period of time that my dad was like, yes, absolutely. And then he was like, you need to settle down at some point. Meh. And yeah, that's what I said. I was like, and then there's now that they're like, oh, that's our daughter. There right. she goes.
They've given up. Yes. You know, it's funny when I was a kid, I'm a product of the 80s as well. So pegged mm-hmm. pants and jelly shoes and off the mm-hmm. shoulders. Yeah, right. It's the best. It's actually all coming back, which is super exciting. But when my friends used to come over and borrow my clothing, which is what all teenage girls do, I started selling them. And I hid it from my parents because I was cash money that summer. Because I was, you know, I had this great closet full of clothing. I loved clothing. All the money that I made from working at the resort that summer went to clothing. So I had closets of it. And, you know, my friends would come over. One day I was like, that would be $2, please. But I remember being I was so afraid that my parents would find out because I would get punished when really, I mean, I don't know what they would have done, but really they should have, I mean, if they had found out and been upset, they should have patted me on the back, like, way to go. I didn't even mm-hmm. have any cost of goods because they were buying all the clothing.
Oh my God. And it's those moments where you're like, was this such a defining, like, it could have gone the other way. I could have been super ashamed. You could have been super ashamed and just stopped doing that. And here we are. We clearly did not go the other way.
No, clearly not. So with that clearly not, and one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show is that, you know, we talk a lot about communication and innovation for multiple reasons. I think one is when it comes to innovation, we talk a lot about how to have ideas, right? How to be more innovative. And that's really important. But there's a second side to that, which is all about how we communicate and interact and behave. But your skills in particular are around what you call impromptu communication skills. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about what that is and why it's important. Because I think we talk a lot about just overall communication, but those impromptu moments matter.
Yeah, I think those are the moments that the best and worst of us can come out.
Right.
I've been an improv performer and teacher for quite some time. And that's where a lot of my teaching comes from, in the sense of like, wow, improv is just this amazing skill. And it's not the ability to be funny or shticky or to tell a joke. It's that ability to just like pivot and roll with it and to listen to what's going on around you and respond. Because improv at its core is just listening and responding. So in those moments where something happens that we're not expecting, or like an alarm goes off when we're speaking, or someone says something that's completely off the cuff and you didn't expect it, you have to be able to like step back from what you are trying to accomplish or what you want to say and just listen to that, process the question, and respond in a way that shows that you're listening and that you care. Those impromptu moments are the ones that I think a lot of us have like, oh, I wish I would have, or oh, I wish I could have. And you don't have to be like that because it's a skill you can learn.
So I want to walk through kind of one scenario that happened to me recently. In fact, I was just writing about it for the book we're going to release in 2020. And I was writing how, I was talking about fight or flight response. Mm-hmm. And I was writing about this thing that happened to me where I was in a new business pitch and I was, you know, presenting what we do at Launch Street and the assessment and all this stuff. And I thought it was going pretty well. I was getting some head nods. We were, you know, having a conversation. And then one of the guys just felt really out of nowhere, just kind of just cut off everybody and said something to the effect of, well, why would I bother paying for this when I could just blah, blah, blah online for free? And the question like put me into fight or flight. And I intuitively, I know the answer, but in that moment, I didn't mm-hmm. feel like I had the skills to respond in a way that was calm and objective. It was more of a like, well, I guess you could. Like, I just kind of panicked. Mm-hmm. Is that where an impromptu skill would have helped me?
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those moments where you think of now how many great reactions you could have had, the really witty or calm or confident thing you could have said in that moment. And if you would have in that moment taken a breath as opposed to gone in fight or flight, built up that skill, it's like that deer in headlights, that brain lock where we don't know how to proceed. That time can shorten because I bet soon after that moment, you had a response.
Oh, on the car ride home, I was like, why didn't I think of that?
Exactly. So it's because you're processing so quickly. And I tell people, like, yeah, I teach improv for this because it puts you in a sense of heightened reality. So sure, that was pretty heightened to begin with, your situation. But if you're in an improv situation, you're two people on stage, quote unquote, or in front of a class. So you've got all these voyeurs watching you, basically, and they're watching you either listen or not listen. So you're nervous, you're scared, you're in a situation you've never been in, perhaps. Maybe you're being some weird wackadoo character or a dog or something that doesn't normally talk and does, and you're responding with the truth of reality that you've created in that moment. So I tell people, if you can do this really hard thing, then normal interactions, you just take the breath, process the thought, and then respond to what gets said versus letting your emotions drive
what
you.
What I
versus,
did.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone's, it's not just you, clearly. I've been in business for 7 years. It's, and I do it too. Like, I can tell when I'm not being present, and I can tell when I'm letting my emotions or my wants lead the conversation. And those are never my best moments. My best moments are the ones that I get caught off guard and I take a breath and I think, okay, what is this person saying? How do I want to respond to it? And then I actually respond. And that silence is never as long as we think it is. So giving yourself that, like, grace to have that moment to yourself to really contemplate what to say next, formulate it, and then get the gumption to say it. That's never a huge amount of time. So give yourself that grace.
Jen, it's funny that you say that because that's always in my head. It's happening in slow motion. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, bruh. Mm-hmm. Like it takes so long, but you're right. In reality, it doesn't. One of my favorite things that I've learned to do, although I clearly did not do it the other day, in those moments where someone asks, particularly when it's a question someone asks me that throws me off, or even a statement, is to respond back. That's an interesting question. What makes you ask that? Or that's an interesting comment. What makes you ask that? And it's not just because I want to dig, although I do want to understand the why. It's also because that gives me a chance to your point, take that breath and just process a little bit more before I respond. Because what I did the other day was total fight or flight.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a great tactic while you're building that skill, is like having that go-to statement of, that's interesting. What makes you say that? Or that's interesting. What makes you think that? And whatever words, and I tell people, if they have a phrase like that, make sure it fits in their mouth and within their own vocabulary. Because you said that very naturally, clearly, because that's something that you would actually say. Some people wouldn't necessarily say that. So they have to fit something into who they are as a person in order for that to be a great tactic for them.
So what are some of your favorite improv exercises that we can do to improve these skills?
Oh my goodness. My absolute 100% favorite is something called last word. Oh. Two people in a conversation. And the last word of the previous sentence of the first speaker becomes the first word of the second speaker's response. So as an example, you can say anything to me right now, like literally any kind of statement.
I'm looking at a map of the world.
World views are changing a lot.
A lot of people wish that winter would come.
Exactly. So you get
cool.
it.
Cool. Okay. I had to think about it.
Right. And so what it does is it actually gives you that pause. So you have to finish listening to that person talking. You have to let them finish their complete thought. And then you respond. Because so often we go into situations and we're like, I know what I'm going to say, no matter what this person says.
Before the person's done. Yeah.
Yes. And it's such a crazy skill that, sure, you're going to end up sooner or later sounding like Yoda or sounding all crazy town because you're going to make up, like, grammar will get in the way of your brain. But having that in your head of, like, I'm going to let this person say their last word and then I'm going to wait and digest that before I formulate my next sentence. And it's such a, like, it does so many things, because I don't know if you, like, how much, I'm such a nerd about communication skills. So if someone is actually being listened to, like, if you're talking and someone's actively listening to you and you can tell, which is also what this game builds, the same areas of our brain go off as if we were having really good food, as if we were having really good sex, and if we were doing cocaine. So it's like the dopamine, right? So that person gets a really good feeling from you if you're actively listening to them. So what a great hack to use in conversation, all from this ridiculous game where you use the last word as your first word. And it just kind of trains you to take your time and really pay attention to someone.
You know, I love the idea that impromptu skills are just as much about listening as they are speaking, because I think we often don't spend enough time listening, for sure. You're right. Like, I had to really listen to what the totality of your sentence before I could even come up with a thought, because I didn't know what the last word was.
I think one of the funniest things that happens after this is, like, I'll teach a workshop, or I'll, like, talk about it or write about it, and I'll get an email, or I'll get someone telling me in the workshop, they're like, I want to use this on my partner and see what happens, because they don't listen. And I was like, oh my God, please, like tell them you're doing this before. But it's true though. We don't spend enough time listening to one another, because a lot of us go on agenda. And we think about what we want to accomplish and what we want to get across, when you're really working towards something together in a conversation. Like, you're never going to get just what you want unless you're also seeing to that other person's needs and what they want as well.
So I love that one. I wanted to ask you about another one, because I've had mixed feelings about it for multiple reasons. Mm-hmm. And then you wrote something in your Forbes article that really nailed it for me. And that's talking about the yes and exercise.
Oh, yes.
And the reason kind of this really came top of mind for me is, I love the exercise. Absolutely love it. However, I think we have a tendency sometimes to use that exercise or that thinking to ignore the people that disagree with us, because we don't like that they disagree with us. Mm-hmm. And yes and becomes this, well, if you say yes, but, you're a negative person. And if you say yes and, you're a visionary like me. And then we ignore all the yes but people in the room. And that's, I think, a real challenge. But you wrote in the Forbes article that many people think yes and means you have to agree with everything, go along with everyone, and there's absolutely no room for conflict. Incorrect. So will you dig deeper into that? Because that, to me, really, when I read that, I really, my eyes got wide, because I thought, yes, this is my exact issue with how people think about this exercise, or and that kind of mindset in general.
Absolutely. I find that, like, yes and is one of those beautiful improv things. When used correctly, it's amazing. And there are so many people who teach it incorrectly. Mm. And I actually have it tattooed on my arm, like, legit.
I saw that in your TED Talk. I was like, yeah. I paused and was like, can I see it?
I'll send a picture.
Perfect.
Because I do believe it's not about just being a doormat. And it's not about just saying, like, oh, you're visionary because you're anding something. It's about yesing a reality and then adding your thoughts to it. So if someone is saying, like, yes, but, if they're throwing in their dissent towards something, if they're negating something, like, if I came and I was like, hey, this guy is green, and you're like, yeah, no, that's wrong, I'm going to ignore you. It goes back to even what you were saying that you use as a tactic in the beginning when you're giving yourself some more time. It's that idea of, like, yes, you think the sky is green and I think it's blue. Can you tell me why you think it's green? Huh. Or can you tell me what you're thinking? Or can you tell me why you think that? Because someone thinks that. Like, you can't change how someone else is thinking. You can try to get them to think differently. You can try to make them see things in another light. In that moment, they think something. And by ignoring that or brushing that off or being like, no, you don't think that, or no, that's wrong, then you're not, again, if we go back to those good feelings towards one another, and, like, this is not about, like, happy-go-lucky, but a lot of times people just need to be affirmed in their thoughts in order for them to start seeing things in a different way. So I find that this conversation comes up with yes and a lot, that, like, when you're saying, yes, you think this, yes, you believe this, yes, you feel this, like, you're just affirming another person, because they probably have said, I'm angry, I'm upset, I think you're not listening to me, or I think that we should not do this next idea, or I don't think we have money for something like this. And it's not just being like, yes, you think we have no money, and I think we do, the end. It's like, yes, you think we have no money, and I think we really should try. How can we work together to get this to happen? So it's more about showing that other person that you're listening and that you understand them and that you see where they're coming from, as opposed to just shutting them down immediately. And, or opposed to just being like, yes, you think that, that sounds great. I'm a yes person. I'm a doormat.
Right.
And I think there's like, yes and is one of those, like it can be used in so many different ways. The thing that we have to remember with it is if someone is saying they feel a way, saying they think something, saying they believe something, that's true. That's reality to them. So you disputing that reality that they don't feel that way or they shouldn't feel that way or that they don't think that, like that immediately is increasing this conflict statement and this conflict moment. So why not just affirm how they're feeling and then move on to the actual conversation about why they might be feeling like that or how you can help?
Do you think, is there something about yes, but, and all the variations that come with that, that just simply shut things down kind of regardless? Why is that?
Oh, I did a workshop a couple years ago at a venture capital firm, and the guy who was leading the firm and in charge of it, he comes up to me when we're doing a yes and workshop, and he goes, anytime someone says the word but, I tell them to stop talking because everything they just said to me was a lie. And I was like, oof.
Wow.
And if you, right? And I was like, oh man. And this is like older guy. So I was like, hey now, we're buds. This is cool. I'm glad we feel the same. Because if you think about what the word but does, it pits two things against another. It elevates something over another thing. So I think that when you're doing that, it's like you're casting off everything that was just said, including what you might have just said. There's so many people that'll be like, oh, I really want to do this, but I can do whatever you want. Okay, so then why did you say the first part? Like, then what's the point? If we could do whatever I wanted, then why would you even give me a suggestion? You're either being super passive or passive aggressive, or you think you have to have an idea. If you, like, words are currency. We only have so much for attention span. So we shouldn't waste them by offering things that we think we have to. And the word but, I think it is not a confident word. I think it is more of a word of like either dissent or elevate. Like if you're confident in your words, you don't really need to use the word but. You just say it.
I would challenge all of us on Launch Street to not use it and to, even if we're disagreeing, to say yes and see what happens to the response. Cause I hear what you're saying and I appreciate, I mean, you've really kind of, funny enough, you've changed my views on yes and, cause I've really ventured away from it because I get really frustrated with the using it incorrectly as you have to agree with people or you're shutting people down. And I think conflict is actually really important for innovation, for ideas, for solutions. Mm-hmm. It's really important for all of it. But we get so wrapped up in like, don't be offensive to people. Don't say but because they will. But what? But I just did it.
It's okay. You're going to be super aware and
totally
so everyone listening.
Well, I
right
hope
now.
We all are though, because I think we'll find that we'll be in a meeting and someone will say something and we'll say, yeah, but that won't work because blah blah blah. When we could have said, yes, I see how blah blah blah, and have we considered this? Mm-hmm. Right? As a very different way, and it probably makes a person on the other side more open. But it also kind of made me think as you were talking that someone says something to me and I respond with a yes, but in whatever form that is, what I'm really saying is my opinion is more important than yours.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody likes that.
And most of us are not like malicious. Most of us are not sociopathic.
Yeah.
Like we're not going out there. You know, 1 in 25 people are sociopaths. I joke with this one and I'm like, we're not sociopaths. It's okay. I think we don't, and I know we don't pay attention as much as we should about the words leaving our mouths because we're constantly just running it. We don't think about the meaning attached to it. So when you put it that way, if people hear it, they're like, oh no, I don't use but for that reason. Okay, then why do you use it?
Right. It's a crutch.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of us just don't know any better. And we're afraid if we say yes and, that means we're agreeing when we don't.
It makes me so upset when I go into organizations and they're like, oh, we had an improv person from such and such place or so and so. And they told us yes and we just think that it's not this great thing because we don't want to just agree all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they taught it to you wrong.
So wrong. There.
And it's frustrating because and not to speak ill of anyone else doing this and going in and using it, it's just, it is so misunderstood.
Yeah.
Because if you think about the word yes, yes is agreeing, yes is affirming, yes is going together, it's positive. It's all of these things that we've learned what yes means. And if you just add that little bit, yes, you're agreeing to the reality of the situation, because the reality is, person A, this person in front of you, doesn't think we have money, doesn't think we should do it. That's the reality. So it's that little like mind shift with it, I think, that changes that yes and that's so overused and used incorrectly. So I get really excited when people are like, oh, I get it now. And I'm yeah. like, yes, thank you.
No, that's a little bit how I feel. You just kind of blew my mind on yes and, because like I said, I've been fighting it a little bit lately because of how it's actually used and creating this, you know, everybody has to agree with each other, you can't be innovative, but that great innovation happens in those moments of tension.
Exactly.
And we don't have all the answers. Somebody else has to help us complete the picture.
Exactly.
But we can't do that if we're on defense.
And if you're talking through those moments of tension and conflict, that's when the innovation actually happens.
Yeah.
Not if you stop at that moment. Like if you have it and then you're like, I'm done, I'm walking away.
Right.
You're not going to innovate in that moment. You have to like work through it and talk through it and discuss it. And the discussion that comes out of that, that's going to lead to the innovation, not the I give up.
Right. So I'm going to challenge all of us on Launch Street to go use yes and in the moments where we disagree and see mm-hmm. how that changes maybe how we say it and the response that we get. Because it forces you really to say it differently. Yes, and I might look at whatever versus no, because I would look at blah, blah, blah. It comes out very differently. Mm-hmm. So that's fascinating. Okay, that's the challenge for all of us. I would love to hear. So your book is Thinking on Your Feet. Mm-hmm. It's great. Totally see the connection with business. I'm curious, kind of just in writing it or in researching in your experience, any scenarios that came up that were a little bit surprising where you thought, oh, wow, like thinking on your feet here really, really matters. And here are the skills that we need.
And I think this is not to have like this listen better motif going on, but it truly is like
that's a important.
Listen better motif. And I think one of the instances that I bring up about thinking on your feet happened a couple years ago when, and I talk about it in the book too, where I was working with an engineering firm and it was mostly male firm. There's like one or two women in the room, and this is important to the story. And the guy gets on stage in front of the room and starts pretending to read a newspaper. And he's like having this, like reading the newspaper, kind of being like very dude, very like masculine. And this girl starts dancing. This woman starts dancing. And she says in the beginning, "Dad, I really, really want to be on American Bandstand. Do you think I'm good enough?" And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, whatever." Conversation keeps going on. And at the end, she's still talking to him and he stops and he goes, "This is the weirdest strip club I've ever been in." And the room dies, basically, and not in a good way, because it's
like he wasn't listening.
Right. And it's a full company workshop. So it is like he's not listening, because we see that. But he thought he was listening. And from the very beginning, he's like, "I don't need this. I'm a good responder. I listen, blah, blah, blah." And so after this, he, like, watching his face fall when I told him that, like, "This is your daughter. And were you making that choice? Because it's a weird choice to do in
front right.
of
your company."
That
leads to other questions which, about you, actually.
Right? "But I don't think you're making this choice. So what is the choice you're making?" And he got into this, like, "Well, you said if any choice is a good choice." And I was like, yeah, but she's your daughter. And his face, because HR was there. This is a full company workshop. Like, they flew people in from Houston and San Diego to New York to take this workshop. Right. So this was not, like, some fun flippant thing. This was, "We don't listen and we need to do better."
And he just totally showed that.
He proved it.
Yeah.
And people always think they're like, "Oh, well, I listen fine. I just need to be better with my reaction." And it's like, no. If you don't have the foundational skill of listening, your reactions, your thinking on your feet will never be better. Because then you're just reacting. You're not truly responding. So in that sense, like, we talked about it after, and he and I still talk to this day, and this was like 4 or 5 years ago. And he's like, "That moment was so embarrassing." I tell him, I'm like, "I've talked about that moment in a TEDx talk. I've written about it."
Everybody knows.
Because it was right. And it was such a moment, though, because I think we go into our like soft skill bin, mm-hmm. and we say, "Oh, I don't need to work on that. That's too easy." And in reality, like, think of a house. If the house doesn't have a good foundation, you can't build anything that's going to last. So if you don't have a good foundation, if you don't have the foundational skill of like active listening, taking a moment to reflect both on your progress and an answer, as well as understanding like how you are as a communicator. If you know that one of your bad habits might be to say but all the time, might be to be really passive or passive aggressive or aggressive even, then you're not going to be able to like go into the higher level communication skills. Like say you're giving a huge talk and using humor, or being able to walk and talk at the same time, which is really difficult.
You know, it's interesting. I think going back to the story I shared in the beginning about being in that presentation and that moment that just threw me off. I think in reality, as you were talking, I was thinking, God, I really wasn't listening. Mm-hmm. I was so busy presenting, mm-hmm. which is never how you should present anyway. Mm-mm. But I was so busy presenting that I really wasn't paying attention to what he was asking. And clearly he felt like I was probably talking to him too much and felt mm-hmm. the need to interject. But had I really been actively listening, I probably wouldn't have been thrown off by that question at all.
And that, I think we forget that when we're quote unquote presenting, like we're really having a conversation with the audience.
Yeah.
So if we're not checking in with who we're talking to see if they're with us, if they're paying attention, like you can't force someone to communicate in a different way than they are communicating. You can change your tactics and your response. So we forget that. We think, oh no, I have to keep barreling through. Like, no, you got to watch them.
So I just had an epiphany about all this. It was so fascinating, Jen. I was just realizing that when I'm on stage, I do a lot of keynoting. So when I'm on stage, I'm fully active listening and talking at the same time. I'm mm-hmm. actually really good at reading the audience, adjusting to the audience, interacting with the audience, and really being fully present when it's happening. And that skill hasn't necessarily translated into other communication moments, meeting with my team, new business, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to me. I was like, oh, I do it all the time here in this one format. Because I'm getting paid to actively be there, right? Be fully mm-hmm. present. But mm-hmm. maybe in these other places, I'm really not using those skills. So my question to you with that epiphany and all of this is, and I love the exercise we talked about earlier about the next sentence being the word of the last sentence. What are other things? Well, actually, let me ask two questions. The first one being, how can I recognize if I'm really not that great of an active listener, if I'm not in an improv necessarily situation, but I'm in that work situation? How do I recognize it? Because I think sometimes we think we're paying attention to that guy, right, who kind of came up with right. the strip club, but we're not.
Right. I think it becomes that, then it's that other, that like reflective component that I was just talking about, like after a situation, after a conversation, like run a quick diagnostic on yourself. Mm-hmm. Think, okay, what did this person just talk about? Did I show that I was listening? How did I show I was listening? Did you just nod and smile the whole time? Or did you ask a question for more information or curiosity? Or did you just insert what you wanted to think about? So a lot of times after improv moments that we're working on in a class or a workshop, the first question I ask is, how did you feel about it? How did it go? What do you think? So any conglomerate of that question, ask yourself after interactions. Say like, okay, how did that go? How do I feel about it? And if you feel like you were not paying attention in the sense, like we know when we're not paying attention
for sure.
if we ask that question. We're like, I don't remember anything that just got said. Okay, well, then next time it becomes, how can you show you're listening and how can you actually listen? Some people listen for information. So it's that idea of like, okay, I'm going to remember two things about what this person is saying. Or some people listen for asking more questions and like this critical listening. So you want to figure something out. So maybe you think of a question that you can ask that doesn't automatically just insert you into the conversation. Because a lot of people think, oh, let me ask a question because then I have something to say on the matter. And it's like, questions should come from a place of curiosity a lot of times. Or like misunderstanding and being able to clear something up. They shouldn't just be a place for you to speak.
You know, it's funny that you say that only because I just recently had this experience on Facebook where this stuff happens too, where people aren't paying attention and responding, where I asked a question about I'm writing a book. So I asked a question about, hey, how do people use the introduction? Do you read it? Do you not read it? What do you get value out of? I just wanted to do a little market research to understand, because I skipped the introduction. Mm-hmm. And I was just curious, how do my potential buyers engage with that part of the book? And people gave wonderful comments back of, I do this, I look for framework, I skip it, whatever it was. It was great. Then one person piped in who does not know me and clearly did not actively pay attention to what I was asking and inserted questions to look smart. And it was very obvious. Tamara, I think you're asking the wrong question. I wouldn't skip the intro to cut corners. There's plenty of research online of what an intro is if you want to look it up. You know, it's just this whole litany, and it was really condescending too, to top it off. And, you know, it feels really good to talk it out loud, Jen, so thank you. But seriously, it was one of those moments where I thought, wow, this person is not actively paying attention to what I'm asking. And if she had, she wouldn't have responded in this way, because I wasn't asking if, I was asking how.
I stopped being mortified in these moments long ago.
I was totally mortified the other day. I was like, what?
Right. I used to be like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. I'm so sorry. Da, da, da. And I'm like, no, people read just about as well as they listen, which isn't good. And they see things, and that's how we can better it. They see things with whatever lens they're coming in on. So whoever this was is looking at it, and she might already have emotions, feelings, whatever, caught up with either the issue of writing a book, with you, with whatever the situation is. And that projection, that kind of like, well, you shouldn't cut corners, is a weird thing to begin with. But then it becomes like, how do you respond to it? Because you don't always want to be like, oh, hey, that's not what I asked. Thanks for being a jerk, right? Because you don't want to do that, or that's not what I said, or that's not what I meant. And it becomes like, well, what's worth it? Like seeing that and being like, okay, you know what? This example is why I'm going to do better listening, and I'm going to do better reading, versus being like, hey, no, you screwed up. So I think it's like in the framing. But again, I'm not surprised that you just said like you have a story like that, because I manage a really big Facebook group of women, like 3,800 women. And I'm constantly like, none of you read, just read. And I tell this to them.
So
I'm not like tattling on them. I'm like, just read before you respond, read and then respond. Because if you write something that you're just like very emotional about and very keyboard warrior about, and you didn't actually process what it was, and I'm guilty of that too. It's that awareness, though, of going, okay, I'm being driven by my emotion. I'm being driven by my relationship with this person. I'm being driven by what I want out of the situation. And if you know that and you want to drive that way, go ahead. But if you are acting in a way that you're like, I'm just feeling this way and I'm going to respond really, really aggressively or in a way that doesn't actually answer the question, or in your case, as this woman did, she's whatever was going on the other side. If she would have stepped back and thought like, oh, wait, why am I feeling like this? Do I feel like that because I want to write a book? Do I feel like that because I don't like that she's writing a book? And it's fascinating when you start taking that pause, that beat before you respond to things, because then you're working through your own stuff.
Well, it's kind of what you were saying in the beginning, too, about the breath. And again, I'll relate it back to my new business presentation pitch that we did not win, by the way, not surprising, not surprising, is at the end of the day, when he asked that question about, can't I just go online and get it for free? What it really brought up for me was the work that we do is not valuable. And oh my God, now I'm insecure. Like it, you know, it brings up all this funny stuff inside of you, to your point. And that breath that you mentioned in the beginning, I think is so important. So I'd love to get one more exercise. So we talked about yes and, especially when disagreeing, and the last word in the sentence. What's another one that your clients love that's really helped them improve their skills?
I think that a lot of people that I work with really, really want to work on their pitching, presentation, speaking, like leading a meeting, that sort of thing. And I think people worry, or people don't pay enough attention to how they say what they say.
Yes, I'm guilty of that.
Yeah, it's everybody. It's like, this is why I'm in business still. So it's one of those, like, I think that people don't think about that they have to keep their voice moving. Mm. And when I say moving, it's like if you are talking, whether you're super excited the entire time or super monotone the entire time and really low, the people that don't want to be listening to you are going to tune you out. They're just going to forget it. So the best thing that I tell people to do is just play, like read something, read a menu, read your talk, do your talk, and move your voice around as much as possible. Now, there's two ways to do it. You can go fast, slow, high, low, and throw in a pregnant pause. So those are five things that okay. are really easy. So speed up really quickly when you're talking. Really slow it down for emphasis. Bring up your tone and get excited or lower it. I know, see, it's funny and it feels really contrived.
Yeah.
But you might find something that you're like, whoa, this felt really good. And then you get to know your voice a bit better and get to know your style. And then the other way is throwing emotions on top of it. So do your talk as if you were having the best day of your life or the worst day of your life.
Hmm.
Or you just ate a bunch of sugar, or you're in a horror movie, or you're just like throwing like silly genres and emotions on top. Again, it's not to do your talk like that. It's to find that vocal variance and to be able to see like what your voice can actually do if you move the cadence around.
And I think too, it's also when you're the one listening to the other person, when they're monotone, it's mm-hmm. just not as interesting.
Mm-mm.
Even if you like what they're saying.
Exactly. I say to clients and people that I meet, you can say the secret to $1 million in a minute. And if you do it in a boring manner, half the room won't listen to you. I won't say nobody. Some people will be nice.
Yeah.
You can talk about a recipe for banana bread that anyone could Google. And if you do it in an exciting way, by the end of it, people will be like, yeah, bananas, I'm with you. And it's like, you just, it's that. Like you have to, it shows the care, it shows the buy-in. I judge so many pitch competitions and I coach people on their pitches. And a lot of times the best idea doesn't win, which is good and bad at times, because you need to know how to sell your idea and you need to know how to be part of it and checked in with it. And at the same time, it's good because, look, you have that in your control. You need to worry about how you're saying what you're saying. You need to take that time to be interesting, because if you're not interested in what you're saying, why should anyone else listen to you?
Well, I think the pregnant pause in particular is so powerful, because then people want to know what you have to say next. And I had to work really hard on changing the speed and the tone of my voice. I tend to be pretty high energy and pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine for a little bit.
Right.
But I had to work really hard on just getting that variance and recognizing that that variance was important to the people listening, to get mm-hmm. them to pay attention. So I couldn't ask them to just listen to me in this one way of speaking that I tend to do. That's my default. But to mm-hmm. actually move it around so that they got more out of what I was saying. Because to your point, and I think it's really important for us on Launch Street to pay attention to, like having ideas is good, but being able to communicate them to the people that matters is where it's at.
Mm-hmm. And it's really hard too. And it's like once you master it, master in the sense of you'll continue to grow, because we all should want to continue to grow, but feel in a confident place. Then you start having so much more fun and we get the energy we put out. So if you're having fun talking about your idea, you're going to get people having fun with you and they're going to want to be part of it and want to help you and want to tell other people about it. But if you're just talking about it in a way that you're like, yeah, this is my idea and my idea speaks for itself and just kind of rattling it off, then you don't look like you care. Mm.
The idea never speaks for itself. That's a reality.
No.
Unfortunately,
no.
You can have the most beautiful PowerPoint and idea, and it's just not. I'm curious, because you've worked with, particularly with a lot of teams inside companies, and you know, you have them do these exercises. What do you think stops people from being more innovative?
I think the worry that they're going to fail or be wrong is probably the biggest thing. I think we as adults get really scared about making a mistake or failing because it's been beat into our heads that like failing is bad mm-hmm. and wrong. And I think when people have an idea, they're like, oh, no, I can't do that because what if it doesn't work? Or what if this doesn't happen? And you can tell me as many times as you want that like Post-its was a mistake or chocolate chip cookies was a mistake, but it doesn't matter. And I think it's that, because people also, when they try something new, they experience the whole like going against the grain phenomenon of like, you try something new and of course your performance is going to drop. It's going to tank because you're trying something new, but then it's going to rise up even higher than it was before you tried something new, because you're adjusting, you're building, you're getting stronger, you're getting faster. But in that moment of tanking, people are like, oh, nope, I failed. I can't do it. And they don't push past it. So I think it comes down to this like fear of messing up and looking silly and all the shameful things that come around with mistakes. And that's like, that's why I always tell people to try improv, like with us, with anyone, because you make a fool out of yourself.
Right. You make it's a safe way to make a lot of mistakes.
Right. And it's like, and then you realize that the world doesn't end. It's okay.
You know, I read a study recently that said 85% of what we worry about doesn't come true. So basically, it's mostly our mind playing tricks on us. And I appreciate what you said about fear, about pushing through it, particularly because, first of all, I do think it's something that we all just deal with. And it's that little chatter in our brain, and it shows up in a lot of different ways. Who am I to have this? It'll never work. Never mind. They'll never go for it. I mean, it shows up in a lot of ways. But the reality is our brains are hardwired for fear. It's what kept us safe in the caveman days from a saber-toothed tiger wrestling in the bushes. So we can't, the whole dare to be fearless drives me a little bit nuts because we can't be fearless. But what we can do is figure out how to push through it when we know there's another side. I think when we know there's another side to that fear, we can push through it. But to get rid of it completely, I think it's just, it's impossible.
Well, that's the thing. Like, fearlessness is not necessarily, in my mind, the absence of fear. It's like doing it anyway, like being like, you know what, this is a fear I have, and I'm going to confront it, and maybe I'll still be afraid of it at the end of it, and maybe I will realize that I was being ridiculous, because the things that we're afraid of usually are kind of ridiculous things.
Right. Well, they're manufactured in our head.
Yeah, like if you're afraid of a bear and you're hunting or out in the, like hunting.
Valid.
Who goes hunting?
Who wants a bear?
You're out in the woods and a bear is hunting and you're afraid of a bear, then that's okay. That's like a real fear. Like, you could be afraid of a bear. That's all right. But if you're living in New York City and you're afraid of a bear, then that's like a very different kind of, like, what are you actually afraid of? So I think fear is, it's so fascinating, and how much like snake oilness is out there with, I can't stand some of the empowerment things that are going on right now, and like, do this and then you'll be a badass, or do this and you'll be this amazing this. And it's like, you have to figure out what it is for you, and like what risk is for you and what fear is for you, and get past it in order to get to the place that you want to go. Like, if you don't want to go somewhere, don't worry about it then. Just be, live your best life in whatever you're doing.
I have to say, the kind of what it is for you totally speaks to me, because that is exactly, that's exactly what I think. I think that fear shows up in different ways for each of us. Mm-hmm. And we had the best way to overcome that fear, or to push through it, is to figure out what we actually fear and how it shows up for us. So my chatter is different than your chatter. And I, you know, I'm afraid of some things, you're afraid of other things. And if we can figure that out, it's not, I have this exercise that I'll share with you another time about drawing someone you don't know and showing it to them. And it freaks people out because, for, you know, I don't work with artists at all. I work with business. So the drawing thing is like, oh my God, you want me to what? And then you want me to show it to them? Like, that's horrifying. And people are, and they justify it with, I'm so sorry, you're not that ugly, when they're showing it to them. But what that, all that is just our fear chatter going, let's minimize the impact of this, shall we? Because it's obviously going to be horribly bad.
And it's like, of course, if you set it up like that, then you know what? It probably will be horribly bad.
Right, exactly.
Yikes.
So I love these exercises, and I would encourage all of us on Launch Street to go do it, about taking a breath. I mean, I know we didn't say that in the exercise form, but I do think it is one of, you know, the next time it happens, the yes and, the last word, the playing with your tone and variety. It's so much fun, too, to do that. So before I ask you the last question, because we're out of time, where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
They can definitely head over to my website at theengagingeducator.com. I'm really active on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. But the website's probably the best, because my maiden name has a lot of letters and vowels in it. And I'm sure it'll be in the show notes. But if you're just listening to this, just theengagingeducator.com is the best way to initially connect. And then there's a web of information from that place.
Awesome. So Jen, what's your final piece of advice for helping us think on our feet?
Do it. Do it anyways. Like, if you're scared, do it. If you are worried because you made a mistake the last time you thought on your feet, or just like reacted and responded, you have to keep doing it in order to get better. So keep, I hate sounding cliche, but that keep failing, keep doing it, keep trying it. like push past that moment of your performance dropping, because it will pick up and you'll realize it changed one day and you'll say, whew, I'm super glad I just kept doing it and kept failing, because then you realize that you have that skill and you've built it.
That's a great piece of advice. Before we go, I just have to ask you one last question, because it just, this popped up in my head. Do you work with sales teams at all?
Always.
Yeah. So the reason I'm asking is, I was asking to say something else. Did you hear it? See that? I just totally did it.
Totally fine.
Yeah. It's because, I have a colleague who owns a sales management firm, a training firm, mm-hmm. and I used to take mm-hmm. her courses as well, because as a business owner, you're also in sales. And mm-hmm. one of the things that we used to talk about that always made me laugh, but is so true, is the sales smile. So the person on the other end of the table is saying, oh my God, numbers are tanking, we're losing customers, I may lose my job. And the salesperson, because they're not really listening, goes with a smile, goes, great, great, okay. So, right, because they're not, I don't know if you've ever run into that, because they're not actively listening to what that person on the other side is yes. actually telling them, which is their jobs and livelihoods are at risk.
Yes. And it's that if you didn't get that from the first hour, however long we've been talking, listening is the key to yeah. all of this. Cause if you, that's where most of this bad stuff happens. Like what you're yeah. just talking about, that, yeah, sure. Okay. Sounds great.
Yeah, it's good.
Like, I didn't just say that. Where are you?
And to your point, right, there's nothing affirming or heard. There's no dopamine happening when no. that's the response you get.
Because you're not actually listening. You're faking
right.
it.
Right.
And kids, that's why I love kids, because like I don't have kids, but kids will tell you if they're not listening to you.
Yeah.
They'll just start doing something else.
Well, and my kids will also tell me when I'm not listening. They know. Mm-hmm. So they'll wave mm-hmm. their hand in front of my face. Hello. Even if I'm looking at them, if I seem glazed for something, like my mind is elsewhere, mm-hmm. they're the first to point out to me, Mom, you're not paying attention.
Mm-hmm. And adults will smile and nod
yeah.
and think about dinner.
Uh-huh. Just totally what I do to them sometimes. Sorry, kiddos. Jen, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.